Welcome, folks, to episode 3764 of the Survival Podcast. We are calling today's show Lies, Wars, Stupid Companies, and More Lies because, well, that's a lot of what we're going to talk about today. The truth is we're going to talk about a ton of stuff today. I mean, I have a mountain for you today, so I'm going to go kind of quick through it. And I'm going to abbreviate the intro. Usually I kind of tell you everything we're going to talk about. I just give you like mile high surface level, 30 to 45 seconds. We're going to be talking about X's new country of origin feature. We're going to talk about IVF plus technology that sounds a lot like some eugenics or maybe like something from Star Trek and Khan Noonien Singh and something like that. Ford lying about jobs that they can't hire people for because they're lying about the salary. Ukraine war is going to end exactly like I said it was. Surprise, surprise. 3D printer FlashForge shows us how to destroy a brand and a company with one post. Marjorie Taylor Greene quit. The AI bubble is going to pop, sort of. Did we learn anything from the dot-com bubble? Maybe not. I don't know. Doge is dead. Does anybody care? When it comes to problems, there's two types of people and fighting inflation with a product, a meat slicer. And a bunch more. We have a ton to cover today. This should be fun. Like I said, I want to go through that intro really, really quick so we can go ahead and get our sponsor stuff knocked out and get on moving with all the stuff that we have to talk about today. Sponsor day number one today, though, is JM Bullion. You know it's white hot right now? Precious metals, silver and gold. I've been advocating putting your money into hard assets, well, since 2008 when I started the show. Actually, I've been doing it for longer than that, but that's as long as you can verify it. And I've always said that, you know, precious metals should make up 5 to 10% of your net wealth as a wealth assurance program. And, you know, the thing about silver and gold is it's all the same. That's the whole point. That's what makes it fungible. That just means you could take an ounce of silver and go sell it for a specific price based on spot price and things like that. What does that mean? It means don't overpay for your silver and gold. It doesn't make any sense. Buy from the supplier who gives you the best deal and takes care of you. That is JM Bullion. Better pricing than companies like Lear Capital, Monex, Apmex. I can talk directly to the president if I need to. They do a discount for larger purchases for MSB members. And, you know, no one does that. Plus, the order ships free. I mean, why would you get your precious metals anywhere other than JM Bullion? Next up today, USABerkeyFilters.com. That is Jeff the Berkey Guy Gleason. Jeff's been a sponsor of this show one way or another since 2010, that's 15 years in the world of podcasting. That is an eternity. He's a great guy. Berkey water filters are top of the line, best you can get your hands on. Jeff's got a lot of other great products as well for your prepping needs at USABerkeyFilters.com. So definitely check him out. And he also does do a discount for members of the MSB. You can learn more about in the MSB. With that in mind, the MSB's on sale. That's right, Member Support Brigade, $35 a year for life. Discount code is TURKEY. Should be real easy to remember this time of year, all lowercase TURKEY. Use that when you sign up, and you'll get MSB for $35 a year. That discount will lock in as long as you keep your account. I've had people emailing me that want to do the conversion thing where, like, if you have an old price, you want to move to the new price. It is not simple. If you've emailed me, I have your email. You're all in a special folder. I'm going to do everybody in one go when I go to do this because it is not easy. Somebody just change my price. I can't. I can't just change your price. I can't just upgrade you. I can't. It's not easy. So it is a complicated matter. Now, here's another thing, though, I've noticed. I have people saying, I want the new price. And you look them up and they have the same price already or lower. Don't ask for a discount if you already have the discount. It doesn't make any sense. But if you're not a member yet, please join. $35 a year. Discount code TURKEY. Become a member. You get the discounts for all of the great products that we have available there. Use those discounts on things you were going to buy anyway, and your membership will more than pay for itself. What else is on sale? Laws of Life. My book is on sale. Knocked down a few bucks on the soft cover and about $1 on the Kindle ebook. That's been going really well since I put that on sale. So I will keep it there maybe for a little bit longer before I go ahead and take the sale price away. Laws of Life would make a great gift for the Christmas season that's coming up, especially for those younger people in your life that could use a little bit of a kick in the ass in getting forward in life. Next up, speaking of laws of life, you know, we came up with a website for the book called jackslaws.com, and it's where we decided to release our AI course, Become Dangerous with ChatGPT, a 40-day mastery course for solopreneurs. This course has done way better than anything I could have imagined. The last round of the course sold out in about 90 seconds. $300 a seat. I think we're going to raise the price $50. I think it's going to be $350 this time. But we expect that it will sell out very quickly. Again, we have well over 800 people registered for the course. We take 100 people per round. So it's 8-1 against you to get in if you're pre-registered. If you're not pre-registered, there is a link in today's show notes for that. But right up at the top of jacklaws.com where it says Become Dangerous, you click on that. That'll take you straight over to where you can sign up and learn more about the course. Everybody that's taken it has really, really enjoyed it. And one last thing before we get in. Like I said, I have a lot of stuff to cover today. But Joel Riles reached out to me over the weekend. They have a dog available. This is a fully trained protection dog, but she's a bit older. She's about 6 years old. She's been a breeder, so she's been fully trained, and she's raised multiple litters of pups. She is a beautiful dog. She is incredibly well-trained. At 6 years old, she is dramatically stable and well-behaved. This is going to be an amazing dog for somebody. She's available at a fraction of what a fully trained protection dog costs. She's just absolutely gorgeous girl. If you've been interested in getting your hands on a protection dog and haven't been able to swallow the, you know, relatively high cost of one, this may be an opportunity for you as an alternative. And you know, this type of thing's not for everybody, but if it's what you're looking for, this may be the best thing you're going to find like this anytime soon. These do not come around very often. I've never had Joel reach out to me about a retired breeding dog before. Tons of comments coming in. I am not going to be able to answer all of them today, but if you want a shot at it, use the formula where you put the word question, all caps like that, and I'll try to hit you at the end during Q&A. All right, with that, let's go ahead and get on into the topics today. So a very interesting thing happened, and when I first saw it, I thought it was probably Photoshop, which is now the excuse in the story being used by defenders of the faith, man. X introduced a new feature over the weekend. And if you go to X, you can look at anybody's profile and you'll see the date they joined. You'll say like January 2020 or, you know, August 2009, whenever they joined. Well, when you click on that now, what you're going to see is some information. And the information you're going to see is, you know, well, it's actually dependent because this is before they fixed the glitch, right? You'll see the date they joined and what country the joining was done from. Where the account is based, how many times username changes have been made, and when the last one was made, and how they connected to the internet, or how they connected to the app, whether it was through the App Store or whether it was on a computer or what have you. Well, again, people are claiming this is Photoshop, but this has been verified as being real, but X says, don't worry, it just looks that way, it's a glitch, right? So the Department of Homeland Security, DHS Gov, joined in July 2008 in Israel. No, I'm not lying. No, it's not fake. And anybody that tells you it is either ignorant, willfully ignorant, or lying to you. It's not fake. This is what it said. Right now, is there a glitch? Possible. But it's interesting how it went from a glitch to it's fake. It's Photoshop so fast. When even X's AI unit, Grok, has verified and there's tons of screenshots available of this live, and there's screen captures and real-time video of this. Account based in Tel Aviv, Israel. 16 username changes last on July 2008. A very old account. Connected via the Israeli App Store. Huh. Oopsie! Wait a minute here. Wait. Time out. The Department of Homeland Security social media account for the United States effing government? Geotracks to Tel Aviv, Israel? Oh, the excuses too, guys. You're going to love this. Well, you know, the U.S. and the Israelis do work together a lot. And, you know, maybe just someone was posting from, you know, like the embassy in Israel or something. I don't know. We don't know. I mean, wait a minute. This is not like the ambassador to Israel. Okay. Yeah. This is Department of Homeland Security. Dress up Barbie's department, right? Because I call Christy Gnome. I don't hate Christy Gnome, but I do, like, the dress up Barbie shit just boggles my mind. When she's not pretending to be a DEA agent, but she's got perfect hair and friggin' makeup and everything on top of it. But she's got all the shit on like she's actually doing the job, right? That's dress up Barbie, right? Now, obviously, dress up Barbie was not in D.C. in 2008 when this account was established, or at least had its last name change. But this account, and again, X has confirmed this, has been associated with that geolocation, that IP. Now, I want to just let that go for a minute, because it's not going to prove anything to anybody who doesn't want it proved to them. There are some interesting ways that that could happen that would not be exactly what it looks like, though I personally think it has a lot to do with what it looks like. But more has come out of this. You know, what they've done now, if you go check governmental organizations, it doesn't show that information. So here's kind of the progression of events. This hits on a Saturday. Like, they drop this like Saturday night or some shit. And everybody starts finding out all this information and starts reporting it. And then they find it on DHS and probably other government pages I'm not aware of yet. That there's something hinky there. And then it goes away. It just happened Friday. And then it goes away on Saturday. That's the progression. It goes away. Just disappears. You can't find it. Like, you click on anybody's joined and all you see is who the normal shit you used to see. Click on your own, you saw the additional information. Sunday, they turn it back on, but many accounts do not reveal the geolocation, specifically the gray check marks for the government, and the ones that do, all of a sudden, all say the right thing. Somebody made an exception for somebody here. But here's another thing to consider in all this, okay? There are a lot of accounts on X, some of them very big influencer accounts. Some of them show like a pretty blonde girl called America First, and it was like, when you looked at it, it was actually from Bangladesh. Interesting. Of course, you know, I use a VPN to mask my location. Bangladesh for an America First account? Bangladesh? Really? That'd be what you would... And the gal that supposedly runs that account does not look like the sophisticated kind of person that would do this. There's one about Native American rights. I mean, it's very, very important the way that it does. They post shit like, you know, a picture of all North and South America. It's all stolen land, you know? And where are they from? Sri Lanka. Turns out a shitload. Of course, both sides are saying, well, all the left accounts or all the right-wing accounts, all the MAGA accounts. No, like, there's a shitload of influencer, high-level influencer accounts that are located throughout the world, not in America, that represent themselves as American accounts in many hot-button issues, right? Like, it's what we've been saying. You're arguing with bots. But they're not really bots. They're well-managed, well-run bot-style accounts. You've got some person in Pakistan or Bangladesh or China sitting there with 800 phones and running them all from one control system. And that's who you're arguing with, or that's who you're basing your information on. This actually needs to be made better and more useful. And I would say that X could improve the user experience dramatically, except, boy, it may not work as well for their revenue model, right? Because a lot of these accounts make a lot of money. They basically hacked the system. And I don't mean hacked like broke in. I mean, they figured out how to engineer making an account big fast. And so they get lots of eyeballs. So they make lots of money on their rev shares. And that keeps them active. And that keeps a lot of this material just chunked out on X. But what I would love to have now is where I can just pick certain regions of the world. I just block en masse. I don't really need to see social media coming out of Pakistan or India or freaking Kazakhstan or Bangladesh or any of these other places. I really don't. I have no interest in it. None. Especially when they're misrepresenting who they are. Now, I know you're thinking, Jack, but you might want... I don't. If you... See, if you gave somebody that feature, right, it wouldn't be by default you only see people in your own country. I wouldn't want that either. But I can tell you there's a whole list of well-known, like, bot factory countries, like Pakistan, like India. By the way, if you see South Asia, that's India. It could be Pakistan. It could be Afghanistan, whatever. But it's most likely India, okay? Then you can see whatever you want, but I'd like to be able to block that. I just think it's really interesting. Number one, how many people have been now found out to not be what you thought they were. Number two, you know what Fox News is talking about with this? They're talking about these left-wing influencer accounts that are fake, and CNN and MSNBC are talking about the right-wing influencer accounts that are fake. Let's just both talk about all of it. But this is what's more interesting. That's a fucking bombshell, isn't it? What I dropped on you at the very beginning, right? DHS's account, right? Coming from Israel. That seems like they're not talking about that. They're not talking about that. Let's do something else. I want to show you something that, and I guess maybe it was actually smart unless they got rid of it. I'm looking to see if it's still here or not now. They may have gotten rid of it. I think they took it down. Yeah, they took it down. I hope somebody screenshotted it. Yeah, they took it down. The bastards took it down. DHS mocked this. You're going to have to take my word for it. Trust me, bro. You know you can trust me, bro. And when it comes to me, you guys really can trust me. I've been around a while. I haven't misled you, have I? So DHS posted like a meme of Donald Trump with like surprised eyes. Like, what the hell is that? And then right under him was a screenshot of that information about DHS. DHS mocked it and then took the post down. What does that tell you? What does that tell you? Something's not right here. Something's not right here at all. It just doesn't sit right. All right, moving on. Let's talk about something else. Now you're aware. You can dig into that as much as you want. Most people, I think, in the world today are familiar with a technology called IVF, in vitro fertilization. This is where we take the sperm from a male and the egg from the female, and we combine them to make fertilized embryos, and then we implant those embryos into a woman who wishes to give birth to a child. And this has traditionally been done for women that want, for one reason or another, are having trouble conceiving. Sometimes it's because the man in the relationship just has slow swimmers, but maybe it can make his swimmers work if they do it the right way in a dish, or the gal herself has some reasons that things aren't working, but you can do this and you can, mom and dad can have a baby that's really theirs. Sometimes they can't and make it with like one side or the other work, and they'll take a donor's, you know, either sperm or eggs, and they'll make a baby with one parent's. Sometimes they'll use donors from both sides, etc. But one way or another, basically, the fertilization takes place outside of the woman's body and is then planted into it. And for a lot of people, this has been really a wonderful blessing in their lives, because people who have not been able to have children have been able to have children. Now, there are people that feel that the leftover embryos, if they're disposed of, that becomes basically an abortion. That's a religious issue. I'm not going to get into it. That's not my concern here. But what if I told you, Neo, what if I told you that now there's a company you can go to and you can give them your man and lady contributions, and they'll make little embryos for you, and then they'll do genetic analysis for you, and they'll say, like, you don't want to use this one. It's predisposed to get cancer. You don't want to use this one, you know. And honestly, if you could do this, I would say this makes sense. Like, this one is going to be born with a debilitating, like, we know this one's going to be born with a debilitating birth defect. If that is actually accurate information, because we don't know that, right? Oh, this one has a high probability of developing Alzheimer's. So pick a different one. Pick your pills, right? Now, usually in these scenarios, they actually implant multiples because they're hoping one will kind of grab on, and they'll do like a dozen, and they have like a 25% chance that results in a pregnancy with one child. Though sometimes you do end up getting multiples. You get twins or triplets or something like that. Right? But it's worse if that's not bad enough. So this company's called Nucleus, and the technology they're using is called IVF Plus. And boy, are they marketing it in a feel-good way, right? Have your best baby, right? You don't want a shitty baby. Have your best baby. What does that mean? So I clicked on Start Your Journey, and they tried to get me as a lead. I'm not really in the market. But no, then I went a little further. Like, you can have plus 4 inches of height. 2% lower risk of Parkinson's, 9% lower risk of type 2 diabetes. And I guess these kids supposedly have that, they're showing pictures of. 1% lower risk of Alzheimer's, 4% lower risk of breast cancer. But of course, that doesn't necessarily mean that some of them won't be negative. And those are the ones you would cull out. Longevity starts at birth. You can choose eye color, make sure they don't have cystic fibrosis or celiac disease, type 2 diabetes, Alzheimer's. See the full list here. You can pretty much, and they just give your embryos names. Embryo 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Even though if they're going to be male or female. So you can decide, I want a boy. I want him to be taller than average. I want him to have low risk, assuming that you can churn out the right contributions to this. And then they'll help match you with a perfect clinic using their technology. You could screen for over 2,000 conditions. You and David are compatible, by the way, there. Access preferred donors if you need the male part or the female part, because for one reason or another, a couple can't come up with some. Woman wants to have a baby on her own. We got a great list, people pre-screened to be the kind of thing you're looking for here. Begin your cycle. Nucleus IVF Plus includes IVF cycles and guides you through every step of the process. This is like ordering a kid. Embryo 1, type 2 diabetes, plus 2%. But breast cancer, negative 8% likelihood of it. So your little girl won't have breast cancer. Have your baby. Step 5. Like, they are marketing the entire pregnancy process. But not just IVF. IVF Plus, right? What's IVF Plus? Again, it's basically gene selection. Genetic selection. So what ends up, and it, like, there was an interesting thing, an interesting dynamic that showed up so fast it surprised even me. So somebody in the, I found this as a post on X. If you want to see that post, there's a link in the show notes along with to that company. And they said, I don't think I would want to use that technology. I want the child that God sends to us. Okay. Somebody immediately responds with, but your enemies might use it, and then their children will dominate yours. You see where that leads really, really, really fast? I mean, really fast. Anybody here in the live chat familiar with the Star Trek storyline around Khan Noonien Sung? I'm sorry. Right? Khan, Wrath of Khan, right? The whole concept was this. Genetically developed supermen who were so dangerous that they were a danger to all of humanity by taking everything over and dominating everything. Now, I don't know that we're anywhere near that with this. This is where that kind of shit leads. It also leads to another disparity between, let's say, the haves and the have-nots. You know, rich people, hell, I might as well have the tallest, best children possible. You know, I mean, I don't know how to feel about this. I do know that the way it's being marketed makes me more negative towards it. I do think if you're going to do this anyway, if you're going to have IVF anyway, because it's where you're at in life, if you either do this or you don't have a baby, being able to screen out things like, you know, seriously debilitating birth defects. Okay, I'm not even sure that's ethical, but I understand it. But when you start selecting for things like eye color, hair color, IQ is one of the things you can select. First of all, number one, should we be doing it? But number two, where are they getting their bullshit from? Can I give you the DNA of two people that are walking around right now, and can you reliably tell me which one of them has a higher IQ? So they're both the same race, same eye color, same hair color, right? So they're genetically very similar, but they're from totally different lineages. Can science look at that and tell me which one has the higher IQ? I did some research, and I don't think the answer to that is a yes. I think it's a no. But then you're marketing to a parent that this child is likely to have an IQ 10 points higher than average. Really? Doesn't this also ring a little bit towards something that went the other direction in a way? Idiocracy, the movie, right? With the smart people reproducing less, the stupid people took over everything. I see what they call smart today, and I'm not sure I want more of those people either. I'm just saying this is a little bit concerning. I'd love to hear what you guys in a live chat think about this as I move on to the next story that I want to cover with you today. But to me, this is, you know, Top Cone here is saying the Soviet Union did something like this with their athletics, pairing up medal winners to produce even more athletic. There was too much variety and it did not work. Yeah, I would agree with that. Like, you know, what sport were they good at would be part of the thing. There's things that are quite different from one sport to the next of what is actually viable. Scotty Stay, 50% of the Gen X population is below average intelligence. If it's more than 50% below it, then how is it average? That's an interesting statistic to question that way, isn't it? I just think there's some real things to keep an eye on there. I wouldn't, you know, really base the next chapter of your life on this going on, but it's something we probably should at least keep an eye on. Now, I want to talk about something else. This is what I'm going to call it, just straight out of the gate, a bullshit claim from Ford. Ford CEO recently made headlines when he announced on November 19th, so about a half a week ago, America is in trouble. The car giant has 5,000 mechanics jobs paying $120,000 a year unfilled. Why it's a problem? It's not a problem because it's not true. Now, look, this would be one of those things that if I just wanted to say, I was right, I'd be running with this, wouldn't I? I'd be like, see, I told you you didn't go to college. You could just go get, you know, certified ASC, certified mechanic, and you can make $120,000 a year. Why are you going to go to college and spend so much money? You could work as a mechanic and build up while you attain your certifications. Go get a job with Ford making $120,000 a year. Like, I would run with this, but there's a problem for me in doing that. My problem is I have like this thing called integrity, right? Like, where I actually want to be accurate about things, and I actually research shit before I start talking about them as though they are true. Now, in this instance, the first thing I did was say, wait a minute. Is there anything about this that sets off an immediate bullshit alarm? And there was. And that was that if I was the mechanic right now and you told me I can go down a Ford dealership and get a fucking job making $120,000 a year, there'd be a high probability the only thing my boss would see is a resignation letter on his desk and my ass and elbows on the way out the door down to Ford to get that new fucking job. And I'm like, well, is that true? Do mechanics make a lot more than I think they do right now? So I looked up, what is the median salary, which means half make more and half make less, of an ASC certified mechanic right now? And it's about $63,000 a year. So it's roughly half of what Ford says they're trying to hire 1,000 mechanics for that they cannot find. Do you believe that? Do you believe that for us? If you do, I'm going to piss in your boot, tell you it's raining and expect you to believe it. Because you are that stupid. If you believe that, if you have those two pieces of information at the same time, Ford says we're looking for 1,000 mechanics to pay $120,000 a year to, right? And we can't find them. And the average mechanic makes about $60,000 a year. And you believe those two things at the same time, I do expect you to watch me pee in your boot and still believe it's raining out. And that's why your boot's wet. Because that's how stupid you've chosen to be. Those things don't line up. So if you want to dig through the post that I made about it being bullshit, someone chimes in who is a mechanic for Ford. Worked for him for many, many years and said, the jobs are real, the money's not. He said, now there are a few people, very specialized Ford technicians and mechanics, and these are more like, you know, like a third shop, fourth shop level. They can do fabrication and stuff like that. And, you know, at the peak of their career, they're making $120,000 a year. But those are like the elite of the elite of the elite, and they're not at your local dealership probably. And they ain't hiring 1,000 or 5,000 or whatever the fuck the number was of those people either. They're not doing it. And that would be hard to do. It'd be hard to find that many people that are that good. So what they left out in that little headline and the Ford CEO left out in his speech is the up to part. Up to $120,000 a year. That's like saying I'm hiring salespeople at $150,000 a year and I can't find enough salespeople. Oh, really? Was that because my base salary is fucking $30,000 a year and $150,000 a year is that plan where I give you a quota that I know you're not going to make and then say it's a $150,000 a year job? You see what I'm saying? This is just bullshit. The top comes and says they have 5,000 jobs in the middle of no place or horrid parts of the cities that it takes $120,000 to get people to see. They don't, though. They don't. I had an inside man just tell me flat out this is bullshit. I was hoping he would come. I thought if I said mechanic at least three times, it would summon him, and he has come. Humble mechanic Charles has come. He said that dude is trash. And what he said was total bullshit. There's another industry insider. If there was that many jobs awaiting mechanics, right, paying $120,000 a year, this man right here, Charles the humble mechanic, would have already been talking about it and telling his people, hey, man, you need to go get a job here. It's bullshit. It's not true. It doesn't exist. And I only even bothered to bring it to you because this is not a super hard-hitting story. I just need you to always remember to every question, every headline that you ever read from anybody, no matter who. And at least when that sounds like an extreme claim, give it a little bit more critical analysis before you decide to accept it as being true. One of the big things that I've tried to do over the years is help you guys develop bullshit detectors through pattern recognition. That whole thing just never added up to make any damn sense at all. Humble also says the Ford CEO has no impact on dealers hiring technicians. None. Zero. No, because dealerships are independently managed and run. Like, Ford doesn't own the Ford dealership. You know, whoever the hell's name is on, you know, Riley Ford down here, Riley, whoever the fuck his first name is, owns the dealership. David McDavid Ford over in Dallas. David McFucking David owns the dealership, not Ford. Kevin here says, it's possible to make good money without a college degree. I make six figures working for someone else, and I don't do sales. It took a lot of hard work, but I got there. I don't disagree, but I'm just saying that the whole damn thing's a lie, right? That's all I'm saying is that salary does not exist, and you can get to where, who was it here? Kevin got to. I did it, too. But it's there isn't a job that's like we're hiring 50 people or 100 people or 1,000 people, God forbid, 5,000 people to pay you this much money and unfilled. It's top performers that beat the odds like that. you know. Honest 120, and let's see, somebody else saying something here before we move on. Matt says, honest 120K salary, and I would return to the industry. Ironically enough, I'm not returning. Yeah, this is just not true, okay? Speaking of things that are stupid for companies to say and do, sometimes things are true, and you still shouldn't say them if you like, oh, I don't know, being in business. So I think most people are familiar with 3D printers, and you may not be familiar with this company, but I wouldn't invest in them at this point. There's a company called FlashForge. Their handle on X is FF3D Printers. And they recently came out with a post, and they made this slick graphic to put up on the post. So they put some, this was not a mistake. This wasn't some intern that posted some shit on X and it's just something they said. This is, you know, some work went into this. If you've ever worked for a larger company, you know that when somebody makes a graphic to put out as collateral, there's a meeting, there's some people that look at it. There's a committee. It's not an easy, it's not like you or me. We just make a graphic and throw it out there. Or we make a meme and throw it out. No, there's people that sit around a table and somebody signs off on this. This is what FlashForge put up. No to weaponized 3D printing. FlashForge does not support or condone the 3D printing of firearms or weapon components subject to the FlashForge user agreement. FlashForge prohibits using our products and services, prohibits, keep that in mind, to create firearms or weapons components. Violations may lead to account termination and referral to authorities, which they immediately took this down. This was the worst ratioing I have ever seen in my life on any social media platform, but specifically X, formerly Twitter. It was brutal. It was thousands upon thousands upon thousands of people descending on this like a horde of Mongolians during the great freaking hordes, right? During like the golden horde. This was like Tamerlane and Genghis Khan together just fucking shit up. Like they came from everywhere to destroy these people. It only lasted a day and they took it down. They made a new snazzy graphic I won't put up for you, but the new snazzy graphic said, I don't know what you're talking about. We didn't do what you said we did. We didn't mean it that way. But we're saying that we don't really can. But we believe in your privacy. We would never report, even though their own graphic said that they might report you to authorities and terminate your account. So basically, this is a cloud enabled printer. Like you get extra features because you're connected to the internet with it. Now the thing about all of these printers, at least right now, this could change, and you might be seeing the way it could change. You don't have to hook them up to the internet. That's like an added feature set. So plenty of people have printed plenty of things that FlashForge says you're not allowed to print on a FlashForge printer. They may continue to do so if they already own one, but I'm going to tell you right now, this company's dead. They're duck shit. All these companies talk about printing little paper clips and little widgets and little gadgets, and sure, there's students in school projects that do shit like this and all. But what drives the 3D printing market is the ability to manufacture things for yourself. And the number one thing that people buy a 3D printer to manufacture for themselves is a firearm. This company is going to go down in flames harder than Cracker Barrel did during their branding shit. Oh, by the way, Cracker Barrel, they decided to ask for the resignation of their marketing expert that was behind the rebranding thing. If Cracker Barrel, your CEO is the problem. She signed off on it. She owns that shit, right? But yeah, marketing expert, right? If you were a fucking marketing expert, you would have never done that. Well, whoever the hell works at FlashForge is also very far away from being a fucking marketing expert. That was dumb. It was stupid. Nothing was gained. There was nothing to be gained. There was nothing to be gained. What would you gain by doing that? What do you get out of it? Like, if it went off perfectly, how would you be better today for having done that yesterday? Instead, they're duck shit now. They're absolute duck shit. And, you know, it's that instant internet karma that every once in a while actually works out. Next up today, I think I lost the link. Let me see here. Yeah, it looks like somehow I lost this link, but I am going to pull it back up. The war in Ukraine's about to end. Now, I'm not saying it will end, you know, by tomorrow or anything. But what I am saying is it is on its last legs, right? It is on what we would call, you know, the short strokes, at this point. And Trump has kind of signaled this pretty hard. I sure wish he had done this a lot longer ago. Of course, I'm not privy to everything, and I don't know why maybe he hasn't. But several members of the U.S. government have been in long discussions with members of the Russian government, along with the Ukrainian government, who doesn't want to play ball with this. And they've hammered out a peace agreement. And before I tell you what it is, I'm going to tell you that Zelensky said, no deal, no way, no dice, not happening. And Trump said, then he can fight his little heart out if he rejects the U.S., the Russia-Ukraine peace deal. He can fight his little heart out on his own. So this was my strategy to end this thing from the very beginning. Cut your shit, make a deal. We're not paying for it anymore. You want to fight your war on your own. Trump's now finally actually saying that. Seems like he means it. And they've got this deal pretty much hammered out. Here's what the deal is. First, I'm going to give you the two things that everybody opposed to is losing their mind over. Number one, the size of the Ukrainian military will be reduced by 50%. This is meaningless. First of all, after the fact, how would you enforce it? Second of all, the Ukrainian military has already been reduced by about 75%. They couldn't keep their military filled. Now, when active in combat with conscription, when that war ends, they will be way less than 50% of strength. So it's a meaningless thing. It's a concession. It's a phantom concession is the word I'm looking for. It makes Russia like, look what we got. We limited the size of the Ukrainian military. Yeah, we did that with Germany after World War fucking One. How'd that work out? So it doesn't mean anything. And they cannot maintain a large military at this point anyway. They don't have the men. That's how many people they've lost. Do you know that last month was a record for the most desertions by Ukraine military? It's either 24 or 26,000. I'll give you both numbers because I'm not sure which one. I read it. It's in my head, but those two numbers are flipping back and forth on me. Is it called 24,000? Just walked away. Just fucking out of here. Now, here's the big thing, though. What is this deal? This deal is, because here's the other side of it. It's the other one losing their mind about. Russia gets the Donbass. The provinces that have been in question from the very beginning, the ones that voted to become part of Russia, those, they have 14% of one province that they don't already control. Everything else they already control. They also control some other territory, significant amounts of it, that in this deal, they give that territory back. In other words, Russia occupied what it wanted. It occupied a little bit more. It has this one pocket, and I think it's in Donetsk. It might be Luhansk. There's one pocket that they have been unable to take. And Putin's like, make the deal, or we're going to fucking take that shit anyway, and you're going to have a lot of people die over it. Like, we know what we need to do now. That's the last piece we need. And, oh, by the way, maybe we won't give the other shit back if you don't make the deal now. Maybe we'll just say, hey, we quit. We're done. We're defending it. Fuck off. And unroot us if you can, which we know they can't. And there's still retards out there talking about, well, they need to get Putin to give back Crimea. You are smoking so much fucking crack, I can't believe your heart didn't explode yet if you believe that's happening. That should happen in 2014. It's 2025, fool. That ain't happening. But here's the thing. One day into this, and I said Putin would never launch a full-scale invasion on Ukraine, and he didn't. He launched a specific campaign to take a specific piece of territory for a specific reason. And that is because the Ukrainians were fucking killing ethnic Russians in the Donbass. And over 90% of the people that live in this area are ethnically Russian. Because of the Soviet Union strategy of extending its borders back as it created the satellite republics like Ukraine, Lithuania, Georgia, etc. In other words, what I mean is that whole area called the Donbass, that was always part of Russia. And when Ukraine was taken into the Soviet Union, what they did is they drew Ukraine further back in. They added Crimea and the Donbas to Ukraine because they wanted loyalists inside the satellite republics. So we made a deal called the Minsk Accords. The United States brokered this deal with Ukraine and Russia, where the Donbas would have autonomy but remain part of Ukraine, and we immediately broke it. And so when this all started, and I just looked at the force-on-force size of things here, no matter how much weapons we give Ukraine, no matter how much money we give Ukraine, I said the best-case scenario now, this is one day into the conflict, I said this. You go back and look it up. The best-case scenario now is Russia takes the Donbas, and that's how this ends. Now, I'm not a fucking genius, okay? I'm not a fucking geopolitical genius. I don't have specialized knowledge of this. I looked at the most basic shit that any logical, unemotional person evaluating it critically could look at and said, there is no way the nation of Ukraine, with the number of people that it has and the level of military capability it has, can stand against the Russian army to defend this piece of territory. And the United States can prop them up for a time, but in the end, you start losing bodies. And we're not going to put boots on the ground in Ukraine and start World War III over fucking Ukraine. It's not going to happen. If this had been another country, a non-nuclear power, we may have very well done so. But we have a limit to how stupid even we will be. So this was the only thing that could happen. What does that mean? That means freaking over a million Ukrainians could be alive today that are dead. That means 300,000 to 500,000, depending on who you believe, Russians that are not alive today could still be alive. And that means about $300 freaking billion dollars of U.S. money never had to leave the country. And we'd be in the same position that we are right now, the exact same position. But no, no, because we benefited from this war. We weakened Russia without firing a shot. That's the cold-hearted way we looked at it, our State Department. Let them go in there. Let them weaken their military. I don't know that that even worked, though. Yeah, there's a lot of dead Russians. But a military doesn't get weaker by fighting wars. It develops tactics and new weaponry. So I'm not even sure that worked. We weakened Ukraine because there's about two generations of men just gone. Just the country's not that big in population in the first place. Just gone. And the rich, privileged are who's left. You can't have a rich, privileged society within a society that doesn't have a large population of the non-privileged to live off of. The country's fucked. The country is now ripe for BlackRock and Brown and Root and everybody else to go in and develop and restore and take complete control over it. It's also going to be a dumping ground for tons of immigrants in Europe that the EU is like, now, actually, we keep saying this was a good idea, but we all know it was a bad idea. Now, send them to fucking Ukraine. Because that's what they're going to say. It's a labor shortage. Not the war's over. It's a labor shortage. They need people. We'll send all these guys into work. So our mega corporations are going to get rich off this. The United States is going to get rare earth minerals and other resources. Ukraine has been decimated, and that's what we spent $300 billion worth of U.S. treasure for. And we didn't give a fuck that well over a million people are dead and that blood's on our hands. We don't care at all. That's where we're at. We had World War II, World War I with drones and high-tech weaponry in Ukraine. And we sat back and went, hey, Russia's losing this war. We knew the whole time they weren't losing the war. There's still people today. Russia's not winning this war. What the fuck do you think winning looks like? How do you deceive people into this mass psychosis? This mass, another form of mass formation psychosis. How do you do that? You convince them that the goal in the war is something other than the goal is. And since that goal is never going to be attempted, that side will never achieve the goal that you said they were trying to achieve. And therefore, you can claim they lost. So what did they tell you? Russia wants all of Ukraine. Russia never wanted all of Ukraine. Said as much from the very beginning. Made a deep four-way. Set up a very fortified position and pulled back into it. And I told Nicole Sauce, sitting in an Airbnb in Tennessee, drinking a whiskey, a week before it happened, it's about to happen. She can tell you I said that. I should have put it out, but I was traveling, there was a lot of shit going on. I already knew. I already had intel come in. This is what's about to happen. They're about to pull back into their fortified positions. The further objective was never an objective. They're going to solidify, and they're going to have a war of attrition with a country they know cannot possibly defeat them in a war of attrition. It's exactly what happened. Your government took the lives indirectly, blood all over our hands, of over a million people for its own political agenda. It was never about Ukraine sovereignty. It was never about EU security. It was never for one second. None of these people ever believed Putin's going to roll over everything, take all of Europe. Fucking Schrodinger's Putin. He can't beat Zelensky, but if we don't help Zelensky, he can beat Zelensky. And if he beats Zelensky, somehow he's going to be like charged up with superpowers, right? And he's going to take all of Europe. And they told you that? And when I say you, I don't mean necessarily people listening to me right now. I mean the average American. They told you that, and you stupid fucks, you believed it. It sounds so stupid now, but you believed it. I had death fucking threats for speaking the truth about this early on. I had people threatening to come to my fucking house and shoot me. Like, you better not miss, motherfucker. That's how fucking enraged they made people with this bullshit. Most of the people doing this shit, they could have told you where fucking Ukraine was before this war. Many of the people still talking. They could, you, here's a map with no names of the country. Show me Ukraine. They don't fucking know where it is. They don't know when the fuck Ukraine became a country. They don't know what the word Ukraine means. It means borderland, by the way, or borderlands. I happen to be half Ukrainian. Just saying. Anyway, you want Putin to win. I don't want shit. Like, I don't want shit. Like, this is not my circus or my monkeys. I don't believe there's any vital U.S. interest in this at all. There never was, or we wouldn't have made, and we caused it to happen, by the way. We caused it to happen. It never had to happen. It never had to happen. Anyway, I'm going to move on. I went longer on that than I planned. Marjorie Taylor Greene quit. And, of course, she's at war with MAGA. And she's at war with Orange Man. And Orange Man said, it's good she's gone, but I like her. She's a nice person. We just disagree. Right? Whatever. I don't care. And there's three sides to this. Well, actually, there's two. There's we hate her and we love her side, right? And the hate her side is made up of the MAGAs. And it's also made up of the liberal establishment. Because just because you don't like Trump doesn't mean that they like you. They might like you in the moment for a second or two, but she's hated because she actually comes across at least as being America first. Right? And then we have the ones, oh, she did the right thing. She stood up. She has integrity, blah, blah, blah. You know where I'm at? I'm at the fuck her stage, okay? Fuck her, bitch. But not for the libtard reason, not for the MAGA reason. And I feel the same way about every Congress critter that fucking does what this bitch did, which is quit before your fucking term is up, but you stay just fucking long enough, one, to draw your pension, which is so small for 5 years, I don't really care. But you stay just long enough that when you come out, the governor of your state can't replace you with an appointment, and the seat will go vacant till the next election. Are you picking up what I'm putting down yet about why I say fuck this bitch? It's an integrity issue. You see, the people of her district in Georgia... But Jack, you don't vote. Yeah, but I'm not part of the deal. Then I can look at two people that made a deal and see one loves the deal and think they're a scumbag, even if I'm not part of the deal. Okay. The people in her district in Georgia elected her for the purpose of representing them, to be a vote for them. They made a contract, an implicit contract, when she said, I want to represent you, and this is what I'll do. And then they went to the polls and they pushed a button for her. Right. Oh, yeah, there is that. She's also worth $25 million now. She was worth almost nothing when she went into Congress 5 years ago. That's a problem that we have with many of these people. But I'm leaving that out. They all do it, so okay. But you know what they don't all do? They all don't do this shit and quit. She left her district unrepresented for the next year. And if you care about the politics of, you know, liberals and Republicans and whatever, then she may not have agreed with the Republican Party on a lot of things, but she was a reliable vote for a lot of other things for Republicans who barely had a majority to begin with in the House and effectively now don't have one anymore. You know, Massey's under the same kind of attack that she is. He's keeping his fucking job. He's running for re-election. Let me explain this another way, too. If Marjorie Taylor Greene had said, I'm not seeking re-election, I'm done with this bullshit, I'm going to serve out my term, and then I'm going to go on my way, I would have said good for her. Not you are a backstabbing, conniving bitch that fucked over your people, because you are. You want me to tell you why I think she did it? Yeah, I think there's more than that. Joe says she took over the family business. Okay, whatever. I bet she ain't working real hard on it. Kevin is asking who chooses her replacement, the GA governor. No. Had she quit a little earlier in the year, that would have been the case. She now will serve out for the rest of this year until January, when she'll be removed. And since that will occur in an election year, the seat will stay vacant. That is my big problem here. If she'd quit this summer, then that's what would have happened. Brian Kemp, I guess, is the Georgia governor. Is he still their governor? Last I heard, he was. He would appoint a Republican. So at least her district would have a Republican who votes Republican ways. She bailed and left the seat vacant. Now, if she doesn't want to do it anymore, she could have kept the seat, basically shut her mouth, and just shown up to vote on behalf of her constituency until the end of the next election cycle. I don't think it has anything to do, not one fucking thing to do with her family business. I do think it has to do with business, though. I predict that by early next year, somewhere in the intertubes of the TV sets and the CNNs and Fox Newses and Newsmaxes of the world, you're going to see Marjorie Taylor Greene on your television set. She has a contract with some media outlet that to make sure she got it locked down, she needed to move now. I am not saying I have information saying that. I'm not saying I'm claiming that as the case. I am making a prediction here. But you know, Jack, predictions, how they go. They're in the 80 to 85 percentile of accuracy. I get some wrong. We'll see on this one. I'm going to say I'm 70% on this one. My gut is 70 to 75%. She's going to be on Fox News or something like that. And that's why she did this and bailed early, because there's no reason not to. People are like, well, you know, the Mossad gave her the talk, or she was told she was going to have an accidental helicopter crash or whatever. Bullshit. I'm not buying that. I'm not giving her that out. And again, I feel this way about, I don't care if it's Republican or Democrat or independent or space alien. If you run for fucking office, unless you are pushed out due to scandal where you have no choice, if you can stay in your seat, you owe it to the people who voted for you to stay the fuck there and finish your fucking job, you bitch. Just how I feel. But it's up to you guys how you feel. I don't, this isn't important to me. It's just how I feel. I want to share it with you. Anyway, next up, are we about to have an AI bubble pop? Here's an article. I don't even know where I found it. Theconversation.com. There's lots of these articles starting to pop up. This is from about a week and a half ago. Yes, there is an AI investment bubble. Here are three scenarios for how it could end. And it goes through the scenarios. And it's not a bad article. You can read it if you want to, but I don't need to read it to you. I'm coming at this from a different angle. One that it seems everybody forgot. I mean, I know it was 25 years ago when the dot-com bubble went and all. But, you know, that's not that long in terms of history and economic and U.S. history. This is what I don't think anybody's understanding. Oh, God. Kevin, don't believe that shit, please. She did it to avoid the bad publicity so she can run again for something later on. Bullshit. What bad publicity what are we talking about? She's going to run on the bad publicity if she runs for something else. No, I ain't buying it. I'm gonna stick with this the AI bubble. So for those of you that are younger than me and my big old white beard here, my Santa beard, you may not have been around during the dot-com bubble and bust, but I think it's remembered wrong, in spite of the fact that you're living in the dot-com boom still to this day. So the entire thing that caused the dot-com boom was an understanding that the internet was going to take over everything. That people would do, you know, half or more of their shopping online, and even, you know, retail or brick and mortar purchases would largely begin online. So here's a perfect example of that. It is possible to buy a car today online, but most people don't. But almost everybody that buys a car today, the online component is involved in their decision. If they're going to buy a used car, that's how they locate it. If they're going to buy a new car and they don't know who they want to buy from or what model they want or what options they want, they trim it all out online and then they go to the dealership and say, I'm looking for this or this, right? So that was the thing, that everything from listening to music to buying a car to finding a house, right, to finding information to communicating would all be done online. Now, this may be hard for you to understand, but if you were around in like 96, 97, 98, and the buildup to this, there were a lot of people still saying things like, the internet's fad. The internet's a fad. There's no need for it. Nobody really uses it. Nobody's going to trust it to actually buy something. There's a gentleman that ran a radio show here in the Dallas-Fort Worth area for like 30 years named Ed Wallace. And in the early 90s, he built the first online car shopping website, and he took it to all the manufacturers, and they all told him to get fucked. You could change the color of the car, and it would change on your screen, and you could put all your – this is the same way you do it. It's exactly what you can do today. This guy built this shit in like 1994. They all told him to get fucked, that no one would buy a car online or come up with all the options. They wanted to go take a test drive, and they needed to talk to the friendly sales guy and all that other shit, right? So as we're coming into this, it is not like everybody accepts it. But then kind of overnight, the reality finally breaks through like 80 to 90% of the freaking bone skulls. Oh, shit, this is happening. This is happening. Like, the biggest companies in the world are going to be internet-enabled and internet-based companies. This is happening right now. We need to get in on it. So then anybody put .com in their name or internet in their description or whatever became hot. And people just started buying fucking everything. We had search engines, right, like AltaVista and Dogpile and Ask Jeeves with Super Bowl commercials. If you're 30, you don't remember any of this. You were 5 years old and shitting your pants while it was going on, right? Hopefully by five you would stop, but you get what I'm saying. Your mommy was still wiping your nose. You were not paying attention to what search engine was running a freaking Super Bowl commercial in 1999 if you were 4 or 5 years old. But this is what was going on. And so I think when we look back at the dot-com bust now, we don't really understand what really happened. Everything that drove the sentiment was correct. Everything that drove the sentiment was correct. The future is online. The future is in websites and web-based communication, web-based marketing. That and web-based information exchange. That was what the sentiment was. The internet will rule all. It will become the dominant means by which people conduct commerce, communication, and information exchange. That is exactly what it is. Can anybody make the case to me that it is not those things today? So all the money was pouring in based on the sentiment that was 100% accurate. However, anybody could kind of plug their company into this like the World was a company, I think, or the Globe or something like that. It was like the guy became a multimillionaire overnight, and and it went like a year or two before people realized, like, nobody even knows what this company does. And when they try to figure out what it does, it turned out it didn't do anything. Yeah. This is repeating itself. History repeats, and it does it through rhyming. The sentiment right now is that AI, will be in every device. AI will drive the majority of human decision-making going into the future. AI will speed up business operations of everything from data analysis to medicine and everything else. AI will drive the future of education, both from a clinical standpoint and from a self-directed standpoint. It will only become better, faster, and smarter over time. And even the people right now that call it a demon will eventually use AI, or they'll just be old and no one will care what they did. That's the sentiment driving the investments. The sentiment is once again 100% correct. What makes it a bubble then? Well, overvaluing even the winners early on, possibly. But it's that there's 1,000 horses in a race and people are trying to bet on all of them at the same time to make sure they pick the winner. You can't do this. This strategy doesn't work. And there's actually more substantial players in the AI space than there were in the early internet space. There were a lot of players in the early internet space. They really didn't have anything because, you know, they're going to be the web way to do whatever. And they didn't have the whatever part. They never sold anything. It wasn't just they didn't make a profit. They didn't sell anything. One of the reasons I had Patrick Seaman on a couple of months ago, who was part of Broadcast.com when it came up, is because I wanted people to understand Broadcast.com is considered to this day part of the dot-com bust, but they weren't. Yahoo did it. Yahoo's retarded. Broadcast had tons of partnerships, tons of revenue, tons of customers, tons of clients, and a massively growing user base. And they had streaming media before anybody else did, and they did it on dial-up. But Yahoo bought it and fucked it up and destroyed it. But Yahoo was also $300 a share when they did it. And I don't know if Yahoo's even traded anymore, but I remember it being 19 bucks after it was 300. This is what's going to happen in AI very soon. We're going to start whittling out winners and losers and fakers. Losers are going to go down hard. Fakers are going to crash and burn. But that doesn't mean that your actual leaders and developers in the market are not going to do exactly what the sentiment is. That's the important thing to understand when you're looking at this space, that it is not going away. And if the bubble pops, it doesn't change what's driving the sentiment, which is intelligent learning machinery that works with humans to do more faster. That is coming. That is going to continue to happen. And so when you hear like AI bubble is going to burst, I just want to make sure that you take in what that really means. That means there's going to be a lot of losers and only a few winners, but the winners are still going to dramatically shift the landscape. And the winners are going to be the licensed technology that's in your iPhone. If Apple doesn't develop their own shit, it doesn't seem like they're going to. Or your Android phone is going to run Gemini whether you want it to or not. That's what's going to happen. Your TV that you buy 5 years from now is going to be AI enabled. In fact, the TV that doesn't say it's AI enabled on the box, even if the person buying it doesn't know what that means, won't sell. Or it will sell to the person that's afraid of AI, even though their existing TV is already hooked up to the internet and already, you know, surveillable. That's what it means. Your freaking refrigerators in 5 years will be AI enabled. Tell you when you're out of some shit or tell you what you're going to need to buy that you don't think you need to buy yet. All of that shit's going to happen. Don't think it won't. All right. So let's continue on. Jason says he's here for the doom. Well, I guess sort of kind of that's what we're going to go to next. The doom. The doom for Doge. Exclusive. Doge doesn't exist with 8 months left on its charter. Doge is gone. It no longer exists. It's over and done with. Did you know that? Here's a better question for you about Doge. Did you even know it still existed before somebody told you it was dead? I honest to God stopped paying attention, and I thought when Elon left, it was kind of sort of there for like a minute and was already gone because it ain't doing nothing. It's been gone. They just finally told you. Now, for those that have been under a rock or something and don't know, okay, Doge was Department of Government Efficiency run by Elon Musk, and it was supposed to recommend all these cuts that the orange man would enact. Well, what did it really do? Well, we did get rid of USAID, but something like 85% of the money that USAID was spending is just moved the spending to other departments. So we did get rid of funding the transgendered operas in Ireland and, you know, sex change acceptance in Colombia or whatever. And that's fine. I'm glad that we, that's a different doge, man. Anyway, I'm glad that we're not doing that anymore. But you know what Doge was? People want to say it was a rug pull. That the orange man just promised it and was never going to do it. I think it was more of a fantasy that everybody that told you it was going to happen actually thought they could do. Trump, to his credit, because he's done a lot of stupid shit, but he's done some pretty solid shit too. He actually tried to cut a lot of the things that Doge recommended, and the courts overrode him, which I don't think they have any business doing. Now, they fought those court decisions, and in some instances they won, in some instances they lost. But somewhere along the line, you know, we talked about the talk that Marjorie may have gotten. Well, Trump got a totally different kind of version of the talk. Let me explain to you what's going to happen to the economy if you do the things that you said you want to do. And whether true or not, I think he believed him. And you can see it in other policies. And I can't think of the dude's name, Steve something, the dude with the bald head that's Trump's chief of staff, that guy. He let it slip on Fox News when it happened. So they started talking about bringing in all of these freaking people from India and shit on these H-1B visas. But they also started talking about all of these kids that come into the United States on student visas to go to school. Of course, this is also when they were trying to expel a couple of them who were like, you know, radical activists and things like that, that this came up. And all, you know, like Trump is just open to like millions of these student visas, like not doing anything to curtail that, even though he's supposedly a Nazi that wants to throw everybody out as brown, right? And bringing them in from very brown places in the world, like South Asia, India, Pakistan, et cetera, right? And why? Why? And Laura Ingraham or somebody like that on Fox News asked this guy why. She said, like, hey, look, we have all these Americans trying to get into these top institutions. Some of these people have 4.0 GPAs, high test scores, and all. And their seats are being taken by students from China or India or Japan or even Europe, et cetera, right? Like, why? Why not just not bring those people in and then Americans can take those seats? And here's what he said. Well, if we do that, the problem is that everybody's going to move up a rung or two and a whole bunch of colleges are going to go out of business. How is that America first? If we don't have enough Americans to go all to the colleges that we have, we do not have a shortage of students. We have a surplus of college seats because it's been overbuilt and unnecessary because we've subsidized it like crazy since the 1970s with these student fucking loans and a marketing campaign of everybody must go to college. But now we have this artificial institution, massive multi-trillion dollar industry facade of about half. I'm going to tell you, I believe this 100% based on conversations with people who have been to college. About half of the people with college degrees are fucking morons. They have no business having ever been to college. Nothing that they do in their life is they do better because they went to college. All they have is debt to show for it. And I'm not just talking about the people with the septum piercings working at freaking Starbucks with a philosophy degree. I've talked to plenty of people that even their degree sounds reasonably useful. What do you do? And nothing to do with it. You talk to them and go, this person has an IQ of about 87. I mean, they're not completely stupid or anything, but they're not smart. They benefited not at all by the 80 or 90 or 100 grand or more in debt that they have. It's a Ponzi scheme. It's a fucking Ponzi scheme. And I think Doge is a victim of the fact of how many Ponzi schemes there really are. I'm going to tell you that I think about 80% of the money our government spends is being pushed into complete Ponzi schemes that don't actually do anything. They don't actually do anything at all. except enrich the rich. That's it. And we're not going to change it. We're not going to change it. We're not going to elect new people. We're not going to hold them accountable. We're not going to hold their feet to the fire. That none of this shit is going to happen. And it never was. And if you believe it, you know, again, I want to pee in your boot, and I expect you to believe me when I tell you it's the rain. Because you couldn't have paid attention to the world for the past 10 years and believe that that's going to happen in any way, shape, or form, because it hasn't. And if, you know, if anything, Trump's biggest contribution to society may be breaking that illusion for people. Because if a guy that is as egotistical and renegade as Orange Man couldn't actually fundamentally change this reality, who's going to? You know, like, COVID should have destroyed your faith in government as a thing, and science as a thing, and academia as a thing, if you were paying attention. And anything you had left for government, the second Trump administration should have destroyed for you, even if you like the guy. Even if you actually believe he wants to do the things he's trying to do, and I actually do believe him, the fact that he can't, the fact that he'll decide something that's clearly under executive purview, that any president before him said they wanted to do and could have done but didn't do it, and some freaking low-level freaking federal judge at the bottom of the fucking food chain can put an injunction in 24 hours later and stop the president of the United States from doing things like deporting specific illegal aliens or order him to reduce people that are in, release people that are under ICE custody that are clearly in the, they need due process. You can get due process while you're being held in custody. And you, what is due process? Let that all go for now. Due process, if you're here illegally, works like this. You say that you have a right to be in the country. Under what grounds do you have a right to be in the country? And if you can't answer that, and you can't demonstrate that you were given documentation to be allowed into the country, you get the fuck out. That's how, that is due process. And whether I agree with the process or not, that's what it is. But you can have a judge issue these orders. Tell the president of the United States to return an international flight that has left U.S. airspace. Now, he didn't do it, but the fact they even think they can get away with that, what does that tell you? That tells you the deep state's real, and they're not going to fix it. And I wanted to have this conversation with you because of something that came up in my second book that I'm writing right now. And I'm not even going to tell you what the chapter's about that this is in. But as I wrote this chapter, I realized that there are two types of people in the world when it comes to problems. And only two. There's only two kinds of people in the world when it comes to problems. The vast majority of the country, and I would say that's in the 90th percentile, are people, first of all, they only see problems that either are a problem for them or they believe they are a problem for them. So it's either like a young person trying to buy a house and he can't find one he can afford, he can't get approved for a mortgage, whatever. So that's a direct thing. Or this thing that's on TV that takes a place five states away from him that doesn't actually affect him personally, but it bothers him, so he feels that it does, he notices that problem. Right? So they only notice problems that affect them only, and they always feel someone else should fix the problem for them. It's not my fault. I didn't do it. I didn't cause it. This is all the 25-year-olds running around right now going, I have a miserable life because the boomers stole everything. You're freaking retarded. It's okay to be retarded when you're 25. Most of us were, right? But you're freaking retarded. That makes no sense. But they only see the problems that affect them, okay? And the problem to them is a problem, period, full stop. What's the other kind? People that see problems as what? I'm going to delay a little bit and see if anybody with the time delay can put that into the chat. People, if you have one side of people that see problems as problems that should be corrected by other people, the second kind of person sees problems as fill in the blank. No, but I like where you're going. There it is. That was quick. 229 Mick is quick. Mick is quick, right? Opportunities. Every problem is an opportunity. Every problem is an opportunity. No one has ever built a company, a brand, or a product that was successful long-term that didn't solve a problem. Let me make it clear for you. Let's say that you have a great big property, and you do the permaculture thing, and you've got like 10 mature pecans that every year just dump more pecans than you could ever possibly use on your property. Are you going to buy pecans? No, because you do not have the problem of a pecan deficiency. If you sell pecans, you're going to sell pecans to somebody that doesn't have giant mature pecan trees in their backyard because they have a pecan deficiency. They don't have an easy way to rectify it, so they use cash to buy the pecan. You see what I'm saying? Every time a person spends money, they are filling a need. In other words, they are solving a problem. You pay the electric bill because without it, your food will spoil and you'll be hot or cold. And you won't be able to watch TV and listen to survival podcasts. So you need energy. So the problem is you need energy to do work, so you buy energy. Right? Why do you have a car? If you had the ability to matter energy transport yourself and things anywhere you wanted, like fucking Star Trek, you wouldn't buy a fucking car. Why would you buy a fucking car? Boop, push a button, you're at the restaurant. Boop, push a button, you're at work. Boop, push a button, you're back home. Boop, you're at the grocery store, you pick all your shit, you pay for it. Boop, you and your shit are home. Hell, I'd beam myself to the bathroom when I had to take a piss if I could do that. All right? You see what I'm saying? We only purchase things because they solve problems. What if it's just for entertainment? Your problem is boredom. Your problem is you want to be entertained and you don't have entertainment. You purchase a course to solve the problem of needing to learn something. You purchase a book for either the same reason or for entertainment or for imagination, whatever it is. We always buy things because we're seeking to fill some gap. Perceived or real, doesn't really matter. That is the motivation. So the second type of person doesn't see a problem as a problem. They see a problem as an opportunity. They also do something much different than the first kind. Well, the first kind sees problems that affect them only. The second kind of person observes the world, sees problems that affect them, and also sees problems that does not affect them, and says, ooh, boy, which one of these problems can I contribute to either solving or mitigating in a way that will give value to others that they'll exchange with me so I can be successful in the world? That's a rich person's mindset. Even the poor person who has that mindset, as long as they're fully functional and committed to hard work and doing what needs to be done and have discipline, that poor person's probably going to become wealthy. That person could have been born the son of a bootleg coal miner who was the son of a bootleg coal miner himself in one of the poorest parts of Appalachian, Pennsylvania. And he could be on your screen right now talking to you and living a great life and having been able to do so with nothing but a podcast for 17 years. That's how powerful that mindset is. I literally created this podcast to solve a problem. Multiple problems. One was talk radio sucks. Get in your car for an hour, you hear maybe 30 minutes of fucking content. If you're lucky, more like 26. I've counted. I've timed it. Right. And the other problem was that the stuff that's there is all political and not life affecting based. I saw lots of problems and a hole in a market. Preparedness, lifestyle design, entrepreneurship, meaningful content, educational content, inspirational content, all lacking without being over full of commercials. And I was making a podcast website for a financial advisor who hired my company to build his website and all his other stuff and do his branding. And I said, shit, we don't know how to actually do a podcast. And I just bid the job and we got it. And my developer's like, I can do all this other shit. And I'm like, well, I got to figure it out anyway. Why don't I solve this problem and this problem at the same time? And then I built multi six-figure business with a $30 recorder because I saw a problem and I saw a solution to the problem. And there's all types of ways to do this. Sometimes the problem is something that affects you, but if it affects you, it probably affects other people. But then there's two types of solutions, the personal solution and the market solution. And a lot of times the hard part is there is no market solution, or at least one that you have the ability or time to implement, because even if you are implementing one, you can't implement 10. One project like that is about all one human being can handle at one time by themselves, especially if like their first run. So I'm not going to be able to solve the mortgage problem for young people and the housing problem for some people. I solve it for myself. So then we divide the people that see the problem as an opportunity, say, okay, I can use this opportunity and leverage it. Or they say, okay, it's that is above my pay grade. I can't turn that opportunity into something that will enrich me, but I can solve the problem for just me, whatever that may be. With housing, you know, I talked about this last week with our new expert council member, Antonio's segment on real estate. It is very hard to do part time, but I said the way I've seen people do it part time is they have a job, they have to buy a house anyway. They buy kind of a crappy house in a not so great neighborhood, but it's not like, you know, a complete shithole. They live in it for 2 or 3 years while they fix it up. Once they get it fixed up, they start looking for another house to buy. They buy the second house. As soon as they have a closing date, they put this one on the market to rent and they move into that house. That will not fix the housing market. It will put one more tenant into an affordable property, and it will get you two houses instead of one if you're willing to wait 2 to 3 years to do it and put some effort into it. The fact that other people won't is where the opportunity lies. That's the other thing. Discipline is living hard today so that tomorrow will be easy. And a lack of discipline is living easy today, accepting that tomorrow will be hard. The first group of people, the 90%, are always the ones that choose easy short-term, which results in hard long-term, and then they complain about it. And the people that succeed and see problems as opportunities, either to solve personally or for others, or both, they're always the ones that live hard now so it can be easy later. With that in mind, I got a little one for you. Because what I'm saying is these solutions that are for others, they're not always about making money. I don't know, maybe I can make a couple dollars on some affiliate sales with this, but that's not why I'm doing it. Because there's a million ways you can solve this problem for yourself using this technique. But inflation is a problem. Even for me, I'm telling you, I like to eat meat. I like meat. I don't like the price of meat lately. It's very expensive. And I like sandwich meat, cold cuts, sliced meat, call it whatever you want to, whatever makes you happy. And I like ham and I like roast beef. Those are my two favorites. Ham right now selling for about, good honey ham selling for about $9 a pound at the deli. And roast beef selling for about $16 at the deli. So I had this, I put this up this weekend, this little video. You can watch, I'm not going to play the video on air because if you're not in the video side, if you're on the audio only, it won't really do anything for you. But those are two full-size sheet pans full of ham is on the left, roast beef's on the right. There's about 12 pounds of each there. It's actually a little bit more, but I use 12 pounds to round it off to make my point. And each of those packets is right about like 1.1 pounds because I don't try to hit dead on exactly a pound. A little bit over a pound is fine. I set the meat slicer where I wanted. I sliced it. I vacuum sealed it. Kept two packages out to use right away.
All right, guys and gals, we know inflation.
There it's playing. And threw the rest in the freezer. And I used my Vivor meat slicer to do that. And here's the slicer and the price. Now, I actually got mine for like right around $195 when it was on sale. Right now it's $246 to buy one. This is a 10-inch meat slicer. And so then my question would be, if this is supposed to be a solution, how long would it take to pay for that? So I did look these prices up on the, you know, the grocery store side to be sure they were accurate. And I took the price on my side directly from the packaging that I bought. I bought two hams and two roast beefs at a Costco business center, whole ones that are designed to be deli meat. That's what they're for. Right, they're exactly when you go to the grocery store and you go to the deli and you say, I'll take a pound of roast beef, and they pick that big roast beef up. I bought one of those. Okay, I didn't cook it myself. I didn't make it myself. All I did was buy the whole thing instead of the slice thing. That's it. Now, I did go to Costco Business Center for that, and I was buying a bunch of shit for the workshop. Do what you want with that little extra piece of information there. Okay. But I just ran the numbers this morning before the class. If I would have bought 12 pounds of roast beef at my local Albertsons, and I looked it up on their website, and it was Bar S or whatever, Bar something. It's the exact same product. It's not even the same class of product. It's literally the same brand of the roast beef. $16, $188 is what 12 pounds of roast beef would have cost me at the deli at Albertsons. Published on their website. My price, $68. I'm not bullshitting you. Right? It's right here. You probably can't read it, but it's on that page somewhere. Okay. The light screwing it up. I did. $68. Honey ham, $9 a pound. I just looked it up on Albertson's website. You can actually order it sliced from the deli. It's not the exact same brand, but I would call it an equivalent. Like just deli sliced honey ham. $9 a pound. That's $108. I paid $2.24 a pound at Costco Business Center for the same fucking ham. That was $27. $27. If you would have went and bought that at your local deli, it would have cost you $296. My total price was $95. $95. That means I saved $101? No, $201. $201 I saved. How much was the meat slicer again? $246 fucking dollars. I almost covered the cost of the expensive, because I said, they're so expensive. I almost covered the expense of the equipment on one purchase. One purchase. Now, I know somebody, but I don't really eat sandwich meat. Figure out how to, it's not the thing. It's the methodology. It's, you have to look at the problem as a whole. And you have to look for every elimination strategy of the problem and every mitigation strategy of the problem, and then say, what is my shortest distance to fixing this problem for me? You know, and Kevin says where he's at, roast beef's $13 to $15. That's great, man. Run the numbers again. And that also probably means that if you have a warehouse store, that your price of the underlying product would go down. And I still, okay, so now I only save what? $190 instead of $201? And most of the people aren't even buying that shit. They're going to go buy the shit in the package, and they're going to, when you work that out, I mean, I could have cheated and used that. Like the Hillshire Farm little packages, you do the math on like the quarter pound ones of those, and those motherfuckers are $12 a pound for ham. This is just basic freaking shit, guys. And while you're there, you know, go ahead and pick up a whole chuck roll and cut your own roasts and your own meat and what have you. My grinder paid for itself long ago. You're going out to the grocery store right now. You're paying between $7.50 and $9.50 a pound for fucking ground beef. I go buy a freaking brisket, a point trimmed brisket, for $4.50 a pound. And I grind that, and I have better meat than you. But, Jack, it's a brisket. It's so good. Why would you grind it up? I don't know. I'll buy two fucking briskets and cook one as a brisket and one as fucking ground meat. I'm getting a better product for half the money, and you're complaining that I ground up the wrong thing? You don't want a solution. You want a problem. Have you ever noticed that when people post these problems, the thing that makes them the most angry is when you give them a solution? Well, what you could do is this. You know what I usually get as a response to that? Shut the fuck up, boomer. All right, the beard's gray, but I'm not a boomer asshole. At least get it right. But the point is, no one understands the process here. You need to look at the situation as it is, not as you wish for it to be. That's the reality. Like, you have to always evaluate things from the way things are and the way things will become versus the way you think they should be or what you hope they will become. And once you do that, then the other thing you do is you look on the backside of the system. What are the incentives in play? Why is the system this way? Why are interest rates high? Why is it so hard to buy a house? Even though people are on waiting lists to rent. And what does that have to do with your solution? Why is meat so expensive? And more than just there's a war on meat, because I agree that there is. But why is meat, why can I go buy the product so much less expensive by buying it in bulk and putting on a slicer and doing this. Like, I promise you, you have the technical skill to do this. I promise you, you do. Why is it so much more expensive? The reality is the biggest part of the expense is human labor. That big chunk of meat has to come to the store. It has to sit in a deli case. Somebody has to sit in the deli. They have to wait for you to come there. They have to slice it up. They have to package it. And there's multiple times that product is touched by humans all the way through the system. So what is the variable that I can quickly address? The human labor component with a single piece of specialized equipment. Does that always work? No. No. It doesn't work for everything. That's another problem people have. You tell them a solution. Well, it didn't work for this. I'm not trying to solve. I just solved your fucking problem one. Now you're giving me your problem two. These two are not related to each other the way that you infer. So I'm going to ask you again, what kind of person are you when it comes to problems? When you see a problem, do you see a problem that someone should solve? Or do you see an opportunity for you to solve the problem and either personally benefit or benefit others or both? Which one is it? And I'm going to tell you, if you don't understand how economically sane it is to spend $250 on a meat slicer that in one purchase can save you about $200, I don't know what to tell you. And I know what somebody's going to say, well, I don't have the money. You don't have the money because you think that way. You don't have the money because you think that way. You change your thinking, and all of a sudden you'll start realizing you have some money. Now, you won't be overnight. It won't be instant. But money directly is a responding agent. It's a feedback mechanism of behavior. It's something nobody wants to accept. I could go on for another 30 minutes on that. I'm not going to. I'm going to wrap up today. I got a late start today because of some things. But Jay Haas says, math and life skills are difficult for many people. I agree. That's pretty simple math, though. I have one question today that I saw anyway, Playbit Patriot. Do MSB members get a discount? I don't know what you were asking about, though. I'm going to say you were probably asking about the AI course. And if you were, no. Or you were asking about our sponsors today. One was Berkey, and they do a discount. What was my other sponsor today? I got to look it up real quick. Well, Jam Bullion, yeah. Both of those are a discount. That's it. I mean, the dog, Joel's dog, Maeve, I doubt that MSB members would get a discount for that. It's already a pretty good deal. So I'm not sure what you're asking about, but the answer is probably no. I think it was probably the AI course. Yeah, here's the thing. When you have this is just like marketing and economics 101. When you have a product, do you have to limit the number of people you sell it to? And even with doing it, that product sells out in a day, let alone a couple minutes. You don't discount it for anyone because it's bad business. It's bad business. I'm sorry. I mean, I want to help people, but I also, you know, I don't hate money either. And I try to model the behavior that I teach you to use yourself. So I would I'm going to explain it to you this way. I've approached people as discount vendors to the MSB. And they'll tell me, well, like a seasonal thing, like let's say trees or plants or something like that. We're sold out and we're already taking orders for next season. And you know what I tell those people? Then you don't want to work with me that way anyway. I mean, if there's some other way we can work together or something, but you have a scaling problem, not a sales problem. So either you're happy at your scale and you should probably raise your price is what I'll tell them. You should probably raise your price anyway then. If you're really selling out that fast, but I don't want that person to discount a product for my people, not because I don't love y'all, because I don't fight for discounts for you, but because it doesn't make economic sense for them to do it. And if you came to me and said, "Hey, Jack, I'm considering working with so and so, and they want to do a discount deal, but right now I'm already selling out, and I can't figure out how to scale enough to take on that segment of business and keep everything else running, I'm kind of tapped out right now," you know, I would tell you, don't do it. So I'm going to model the behavior that I would teach. And that's my mindset, is that when you have something so in demand that it sells out, there's no need to discount it for anybody. Does that make me heartless, cold capitalist? I don't think so. I think it makes, you know, as much information as I give away for free and have for 17 years, I just think there is a point where you need to make a profit of what you're doing or you can't keep doing it. So anyway, with that, I am wrapped up. I hope you guys enjoyed the show. I want to remind you guys again, my book is on sale. Laws of Life by Jack Spirico, Ditch the System, Design Your Life. If you like, especially the ending segment today, I think you'll really like the book. It helps you figure out life as a whole with systems thinking and with guiding philosophy. It doesn't tell you what to do. It tells you how to think about different situations and figure out what to do that will most benefit you. In other words, even though it's written for a younger crowd, it's a book for grown ass men and women. That's what it is. Or young people that want to become grown ass men and women. I also do have the MSB on sale. That's on sale for $35 a year, discount code Turkey. And I will be back tomorrow with another episode. We will not be doing doom and gloom. We will not be doing current events. I'm not sure what we're going to do tomorrow just yet. I have some ideas. And then Wednesday we will have the Thanksgiving special. And then I will not be here Thursday. There won't be an expert council show or anything Thursday. That's Thanksgiving. I don't think you need to be listening to my podcast on Thanksgiving. If you feel like it, listen to an older one. And I'll be back Monday and we'll do it all again. Appreciate everybody for tuning in today. Thank you for showing up. I appreciate y'all. Have a great day. And have a wonderful Thanksgiving if you don't check in again before that comes.
They said you should have a house the American way. A dollar down, a dollar a month, and you never have to pay. There's a better way to do this. Let me show you a better way. You don't have to be another face in the crowd. You don't have to live the way they tell you to. Make your own way, others will follow. The revolution.